When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Yes, people, welcome back to Anime Mentality. Oh, it's been a while since we've interviewed someone, but the long wait was worth it. Trust me, because today we have none other than Mr. Giovanni Vaccaro. Gio Vaccaro is a performance coach, speaker, and the co-founder of Glam Squad. He has dedicated himself to helping creative entrepreneurs overcome limiting beliefs and unlock their full potential. With over 22 years in the beauty industry, he played a pivotal role in transforming beauty services, building a thriving pro community, and leading Glam Squad to over 1 million services for top-tier clients like Tiffany & Co., Cartier, and Netflix. As a former top performer at Fakai, Gio's passion for human connection and growth drives his mission to help entrepreneurs optimize their mindset, master peak performance habits, and achieve lasting success. What if the way you've been taught to find success is actually holding you back? In this episode, we explore how to uncover your dream, align it with your purpose, and turn it into a fulfilling reality. What if fulfillment should come before success? How can you build a life that excites you every day? And what does it take to transform passion into a business that feels meaningful? We'll break down practical steps for discovering what truly drives you, avoiding the trap of chasing someone else's version of success, and creating a path that blends both fulfillment and achievement. So tune in to learn how to design a life and business that feels as good as it looks. Like always, just help me out, you know, just give me that like or follow or whatever it is you're listening on. It'll be very kind of you. Okay, with that being said, I want to get straight into it because this episode is a banger, trust me. So, please help me welcome Mr. Giovanni Vaccaro. One of my favorite things about you is that you promote the concept of fulfillment and gratitude as a key element to your success, and almost something as a foundation that comes before success. Why is that?
Well, success without fulfillment is the greatest failure. I mean, think about it. You keep grinding, you keep working hard, you want to achieve, you want the recognition, and then the goalposts keep moving. At least I've seen this in my own life, and I've really worked hard to adjust that and fix that. But your success keeps getting pushed and pushed and pushed. And to me, it's like, well, what's the point? You know, at some point you have to say, I'm proud and I'm gonna focus on learning how to be fulfilled and learning how to enjoy the moment. You know, I'm sure you've heard, I'm not teaching anything new here. I'm sure you've heard that, you know, you gotta love the journey, not the destination. And I found that to be so true in my life. I have so many examples where it's like I worked so hard to achieve, and be recognized. And now what I'm finding is that I want to wake up and find gratitude and practice gratitude to really love what I'm doing and the abundance that's in my life. You know, you follow me and you obviously know this about me, but that moment of gratitude in the morning to be able to think about the abundance in my life, what I found is that just brings me even more abundance in my life. And years ago, I wasn't like that. I spent so much time moving those goalposts and wanting more and wanting to achieve more. And while that's all good, trust me, I'm not saying that you shouldn't try and work hard and achieve and be the best that you can be. I think everyone has a commitment to add value to this world. And if that's your way of doing it, beautiful. And that's what I did. But enjoying those moments and enjoying the failures and enjoying the struggles and enjoying the adversity and enjoying the pain that comes along with it, because it can be painful at times, especially if you want to be a successful entrepreneur, realizing that the success requires fulfillment. And the more fulfilled that you can be in those moments of adversity and in those moments of complexity and challenge, the more that you have the opportunity to really enjoy and love what you do, and it shows in your work. So I find that I found that being older and hopefully a little bit wiser, you look back at those days of being in high school or in college, and you know, there's so much comparison happening, especially with social media. You know, I'm 40 years old, Rishi. Like, you're much younger than me. I'm 40, and I didn't have social media growing up. And what I can tell you is that, like, now I can imagine how much harder it is, because you're just, there's so much opportunity to compare and to consume other people's information and other people's lives. And it's like, oh, they've got a better idea than me, or they're making more money than me, or they've got a bigger internship than I do. And it's like, don't let comparison steal your joy. Don't let it kill your joy. And that's something that I have to, you know, I have to practice that every single day. Because years ago, I used to wake up and I would find that the first thing I would do is I'd check my phone.
Yeah.
I'd check my phone. I'd look at people's content. I'd start comparing myself to their vacation or their lives or all the highlights that they're putting out there in the world. And what I found is that that's actually so detrimental to the type of life that I'm trying to create and the type of feeling and the type of growth that I'm trying to see in my life. So I don't touch my phone for probably about 30 to 45 minutes until I wake up. And that has really benefited me to really find joy and gratitude in the start of the day.
So gratitude can be found at all levels.
Gratitude is a practice. Okay. And the way that I've found gratitude in my life is to actually be very intentional about the practice of gratitude. So my morning routine, you know, probably know this about me, but my morning routine is everything to me. So I wake up every day at, call it 4:45 in the morning. And the first thing I do is I come downstairs. The kids, I've got two kids. I've got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. They're not up. No one's bothering me. This is my hour and 15 minutes of divine time. It's my time. It's creative time. It's time to focus on me so that I can focus, so I can be better for the rest of the world. And that the first thing I do is I meditate and visualize for 15 minutes. It has served me for 7 years now. I have not missed the meditation in 7 years. And part of that is because I never want to lose that feeling of being centered and connected to all the challenges and the stuff that I'm going to face. As an entrepreneur, there's going to be so much stuff being thrown at you. So I need to focus on me and really get my head right. And so I clear my mind, 15 minutes of meditation and visualization. And then I go into a gratitude journal. And I literally write down every single day, 3 things that I'm grateful for, 3 things that would make my day great, and an affirmation. And I don't just like write it down, and it's not passive. It's intentional work where you're changing your physiology while you're doing it. You're like breathing into it. And the more that I do it and the more abundance that I am grateful for, the more that gets attracted into my life. And so gratitude is a practice. You've got to work at it. And there's moments where, yeah, I've woken up and I'm like, I don't feel like doing my gratitude journal, but I've gotten into this habit and it served me. And a lot of the people that I work with as a coach and in my business at Glam Squad as a co-founder, you know, there's this element of gratitude that I think people are starting to realize, because it sounds so simple. It's like, wait, you're telling me that if I just write down what I'm grateful for, that stuff is just going to start coming into my life more? The simple answer is yes. It does. I've seen it in my life and I've seen it in the people that I work with. But also there's studies, there's research. And sometimes we think because it's simple, it can't be, it can't just work and happen. The answer is it actually can. So it's a great practice. I recommend it to everybody.
It's funny. I spoke to one of my good friends now. I had an internship under him, but we're good friends now. And I even did a podcast with him and it was about visualization. And just recently, he made me a tape, which I listen to now every day in the morning for about 25 minutes. Mm. And before he gave me the tape, I thought, I love the guy, but I was like, there's no way a 15-minute tape can actually make that much of a difference. I was like, there must be some sort of, craziness that can, come from this guy. He's nuts, right? Mm-hmm. Ever since I started listening to this tape, the days that I don't listen to the tape, I see a clear difference. It's almost, it overtakes my life. It's almost like, when I listen to this tape, because I don't know what you visualize in your practice meditation, and you can talk about it if you'd like.
Yeah.
But for me, I visualize myself in 5 years about the scene and the person I want to become. And I don't know what it is, but even later in the day, it almost seems like I'm attracting that energy and I'm acting in a way that the person in 5 years would act. And I think that's what draws that energy towards me. And
that's right.
I don't know if that's what you're talking about when it comes to gratitude, that when you at least even put the pen to paper, it's just drawing that energy of gratitude in the rest of your days.
Yeah, so I love the way you're thinking. It's so good. So there's a couple of things. The first I would say is my gratitude work in the morning. Some of it is grateful for what's to come, the stuff that I'm manifesting in my life. And some of it is just grateful for in this very moment, the air in my lungs, the health of my family, the opportunities that I've been fortunate to have in my life, the blessings, all of those things, that's the beauty of gratitude, is that it's infinite. And, rather we focus so much on what we don't have. And it's just kind of natural for us, especially in today's world, because of so much comparison and everyone's fighting for our attention, that it's so easy to focus on I don't have that car, or I don't have that job, or I don't have that vacation, or my house doesn't look like that. And rather than have that be your mindset, which is very easy, right? That's kind of our default in today's world, is the what we don't have. Focusing on the good in our life, that's the change. And that's the transition that happens. And the more that I feel maybe helpless in my life, I try and become helpful. So I even find moments of gratitude to contact friends or people that I love in my life. I've got their phone number, or I'm texting them, or I'm leaving them a voice message or a video I'll send them. And it's not like abstract and surface level and just like, hey man, was just thinking about you. Mm-hmm. Have a great day. But it's like pointing out, if you can try this in your life, hopefully your audience will appreciate this, but tomorrow when you wake up, think about one person that you want to just let them know how great you think they are. This is like the coolest thing ever, because I just love how this makes you feel. It's almost selfish, but not really. So you reach out to them and you just highlight something about them that is why you love them, why you care about them, why you think they're special. It could be a brother, a sister, a mother, a father, a friend, whoever, your wife, anybody. But make it really, really specific. So I've sent a message to my brother letting him know that I just love the way that I saw him parent his kid in this one moment, and how special his son must have felt in that moment when he had that connection with them. And I was like, that's much deeper than just hey man, just thinking about you, think you're great, have a wonderful day, love you bro. It's like, it comes from a different place and people crave that. So that's the gratitude part. And while also feeling grateful for yourself, showing gratitude towards other people. But then it's the visualization, which I love what you talked about, which is visualizing yourself in 5 years from now. And I do this same thing, Rishi, which it's so crazy when you see this stuff happen, because just like what you said about your friend who gave you this, this video to watch, and you're like, I don't know, this is 15 minutes, this is crazy, is this really going to work? First of all, you got to be patient, because stuff doesn't just happen overnight. But I have seen so many examples of manifestation happening in my life, where an energy that I put out there, a thought, a desire, something that I want to achieve. I meditate on it. I visualize on it in the morning for 10 to 15 minutes. And it could be me in 5 years. It could be me in 3 years. It could be me wanting to be, you know, one of the best motivational speakers in the world. And you start seeing all of a sudden these things just start coming your way, where at first you're like, is this a coincidence that like I now have this opportunity? But you put this energy out there, you manifested it. And what's the most fascinating thing for me is I've been really studying and researching the subconscious mind. And right, we have our conscious mind that's where all of our thoughts happen. But the subconscious is where all of those thoughts that we've been thinking about over and over and over again, they find their way into the subconscious mind. So the subconscious mind only thinks about what you've trained it to think about. And if it's the same thought over and over and over again, whatever you want to achieve, whatever you want to be, where you're making it believe, you're just telling it what to believe. It believes it. Whether it happened or not, it's going to activate so that it happened in the future. It's the most coolest and fascinating thing. And there's a guy named Wayne Dyer who unfortunately, you know, passed away years ago, but he is the godfather and the pioneer of personal development and this concept of like really, really teaching you how to believe, not what to believe, but how you can actually rewire your brain to believe it and then to activate it. And I've used that in my life, plenty of examples of seeing this stuff sort of naturally just energies coming my way. And I'm like, well, this is really cool. I gotta tell people about this and I gotta do more of it.
Yeah, the guy that I was talking about, Sean Pritchard, I had him on the show. I can put the episode in the show notes if people want to give it a listen. But he literally talks about this idea that the subconscious doesn't know the distinction between imagination and reality. Mm. So whatever you imagine, the subconscious will take that as your true self. And that's why I think people might look at this or hear this and say, we're nuts. What are you guys talking about? It's not like you can just imagine something and create it. And I think one big thing about visualization and manifestation is obviously it's not like you just think about, oh, I'm going to have a Ferrari and you just get a Ferrari. There has to be a key piece of action that has to be involved. And one of the ways I like to define my terms is by giving operational definitions, almost like if we want to practice gratitude, how do we do that practically? And you said, let's even three things in the morning, just write it down. What are other ways we can actually take action or practical advice that we can use to create more fulfillment in our lives?
Yeah, so a gratitude journal has worked for me. I do that every single morning, like I mentioned. And you don't have to overthink it. I think when it comes to journaling, so first of all, people have a reaction. Some people have a reaction to that. I know I did in the beginning. I was like, wait, you want me to like write down my thoughts in the morning? How is that going to serve me? Also, who has time for that? You know, you have to be intentional about these things. And the more that you turn them into daily habits, the more that you can see the value and the result of those habits. So there's a consistency in this discipline that's needed and required, like everything else. You go to the gym for one day, you're not going to see any results. You go to the gym for 6 months, you'll see great results. You go to the gym for an entire year and you're going to see the best results. And so it's the same thing with any of these disciplines and these habits that I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of successful entrepreneurs, and they have wonderful balance in their lives. They're very intentional about what they do, how they do it, why they do it, and the reasoning behind all of it, their purpose. So gratitude is one of those practices that I think is really important. The gratitude journal, absolutely. There's so many different journals, but just writing down what you're grateful for and really breathing into it, because the physiology part is really important. If you like ask me what I'm grateful for and I'm like, yeah, I'm grateful for my family, it's like one thing. But if you like breathe into it and put your body into it, your physiology into it, and you're like, I am so grateful for my family, for their health, for the love that they give me and the blessings that have come with them, it's a very different energy. And so that's one practical way of practicing gratitude, is through a journal. The other one is by giving gratitude or showing others that you're grateful for them through what I mentioned before, which is throw somebody a text message, throw them a video message, a voice note, something that lets people know that you're thinking about them, that you love them, and that you're grateful for them. That's another way. And then I think visualization. You know, you can visualize the things that you want to be grateful for in the future. And I love what your friend said about the fact that your subconscious doesn't know the difference between reality and imagination. My gosh, that's why my advice to my guidance to everyone that I speak to and people your age, my age, is give yourself moments throughout the day to dream. And what I mean by that is, if your schedule is so tight, I know, again, I work with a lot of entrepreneurs. I work with a lot of executives. Their schedule's maxed out from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. It's like everything is calculated and methodical, and they know exactly when you are that tightly scheduled, where's the opportunity to dream? Where is the opportunity to allow your mind to go into what can be versus what is? And that was a struggle for me, because I'm a doer and I'm somebody who, I love the idea of like being packed with meetings. You know, I was, you know, my story is I went from my dad's restaurant business and to becoming a top hairstylist in New York and working at one of the top salons in the country, to then co-founding my business, Glam Squad, which is mobile on-demand beauty services, and now we're nationwide. And it's a very successful
Unreal.
Business, really, really cool. And I love being busy. You know, I still love being busy. I want to be useful. I want to make an impact. And that's all great. But when you're busy, is at the expense of dreaming and of the ability to think about how life can be different and how business can be different. And just giving yourself the ability to do that and the space to do that is something that I think a lot of people don't do. And it's definitely an impediment from a culture that is so, you know, we're a grinding culture. Like, let's get it done. We want to be busy. We want to have the, you know, the business with the six side hustles and all of that. Hey, I mean, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing at all. But if you don't give yourself the space and the ability to dream and to allow your mind to just go somewhere that's not in this moment right now, the creativity that comes with that, that's why I love my mornings, because there's no one pulling at me saying, I need you for this. My kids aren't calling me papa. My wife doesn't need something from me. My business partner doesn't need anything. My colleagues, it's just my time to feel like I'm in control. And where do I want to go? It's really cool. And so give yourself that space, even at a young age, give yourself that space to dream. And know that is going to have incredible value for you in the future.
What does someone's dream, what is the dream supposed to look like? Is it supposed to be the visualization of us in 5 years? Is it something else? Is it our pursuit? What is it?
Well, I feel like when I first started doing this, my dream, when I would allow my mind to like just go off and have some fun, I just found myself like thinking about all the things I needed to do. So mm-hmm. It was like, it wasn't even dreaming. You're just going through like your checklist, like, oh, I have to do that and I have to do this. And you know, I have to take out the garbage and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, okay, that's not dreaming. That's just going through your checklist. The beauty of it is you don't need to have rules around this. You can literally go wherever you want to go. It could be dreaming about your dream business. It could be dreaming about a material thing that you desire, right? And then the why behind it. Maybe you want a beautiful car. Maybe you want a certain house. Maybe you want a certain watch. Like, hey, I'm not a materialistic kind of person, but like people can dream that way. And if it means that you're going to activate it through a certain way, great. But maybe it's dreaming about a vacation. and you're like, I've been wanting to go to the Caribbean so bad, and I'm going to dream about, you know, what the ocean looks like and the color of the water and, you know, the beauty of the sound of the wind and the sun. It could be literally anything. But allow yourself to go there. And from a business standpoint, what I found is I've allowed myself, you know, there's a big transition between being a hairstylist and then becoming an entrepreneur and scaling a business with a lot of people. Like, we have thousands of pros at Glam Squad, like around the country. And I wouldn't say that that was a dream of mine. I didn't dream about Glam Squad, but I dreamed about making a really big impact. I dreamed about having a business that kind of didn't exist before. That was like so exciting. I'm like, oh my gosh, how cool would that be if I was able to like impact so many people and change their lives and bring people confidence? And that was the dream. And I would dream about that over and over again. And then all of a sudden, Glam Squad is brought to me. This concept of Glam Squad that didn't exist before. So you don't have to be so clear about it. You can't. The more clear you are, the better it is. But you don't have to be so clear about it. Just allow yourself to dream and think about where could your life go.
There's two challenges I see people typically having when it comes to finding their dream. One of them is, first of all, they just don't know what they actually want. And the second one is more interesting. It's they tend to conflate their dream with something that's actually more spontaneous. So for example, someone's dream might be to become really, really rich. And like you said, even though you might not be a very materialistic person, I feel like their dream of being really rich might be conflated with something else, whether it's actually the need to provide for family. What are the questions we should ask ourselves to actually find out our true, real dream?
There's a lot in that question. And so I want to take the first part,
yep,
which is the idea of like, my dream is to be really, really rich. I would imagine everyone's probably dreamed that before. When I was 16 years old, that was absolutely my dream. I just want the most money possible. Mm-hmm. Back then it was like, you know, $1 million was a ton of money back then. Right. And like, you know, now it's like, there's a lot of millionaires out there. So it's like, now I think the dream is like, I want $1 billion.
Exactly.
But either way, money is a means to something. If you have $1 million and you have no one that loves you to spend it with, and you have nothing that you can do with it, then it's just paper. It's just $1 million.
It's a tool.
So it's a tool, but it's a tool. And what I found is as I've gotten older and hopefully wiser, and the people that I connect with a lot of times are in their 30s and 40s and 50s, it's like there's the freedom of time is one of the biggest forms of wealth for somebody, that they can make choices with their time. I can wake up in the morning and spend time the way that I want to spend time is one of the highest forms of wealth, where you don't have to do something that you just don't want to do at scale, where it's like, I'm spending all my time doing this and I don't want to do it, but I don't have a choice. That is when people feel like they don't have wealth in their life. But a form of wealth is time and the ability to be able to have your time to do whatever you want to do with it. That's one of the highest forms of being rich. So the second part to your question is, what would you say, so how does somebody find their purpose, I think is what you said.
What questions
should they ask themselves? I think it's a couple things, because I think the, you know, purpose in your youth is, I was very conflicted by that. Like, what do you mean by purpose? Like, I just want to like make money and have fun. And like, that was my purpose back then. And as I've had life experiences in a family, I started realizing that like I want my purpose to be more than that. And I kind of found my way into the world that I live in now, which is this world of personal development, business development, coaching people, being an entrepreneur, being a co-founder of a business. And it's a lot of responsibility, but my purpose is to be able to take what I've learned and shared and really impact people so that I can help them build and get to their greatness and their full potential, because I see it in people. And the biggest disappointment is when somebody doesn't, you know, we have so much ability as humans, but a lot of times what we actually do and achieve is usually unfortunately, unfulfilling, and it's usually disappointing. And so my goal is to help people get into their greatness. That's what I love to do. The questions that somebody in their youth can ask themselves is a couple things. What am I naturally good at? What are you naturally good at? We've all been born with something that we're naturally good at. The second is, what do I actually love doing? How do I love spending my time? So it's like, what are you naturally good at? What are your God-given talents? How do you like spending your time? Do you love doing this thing? What do you love about it? And the third thing I would say, what is the world value? If you can think about it from those three places, because what you're great at and what you're naturally gifted at, but the world sees no value in it, that's going to be a roadblock for you. But if you're like, I'm great at this, let's say it's basketball. I'm so good at basketball. I also love playing basketball. The world loves basketball and loves entertainment. Well, that could be an avenue for you, just using that as an example. So for me, when I look at my life now, but when I was younger, it was like, okay, what am I naturally gifted at? One of my natural gifts is connecting with people. I love people. That's a natural gift of mine, to want to build relationships with people. I did it at a very young age. It doesn't mean I'm super extroverted. It just means that, like, I love connecting one-on-one with people and one-to-many with people. It's also something that I love doing. So I'm good at it, and I love doing it. Does the world value it? You better believe it. That's why there's podcasts. That's why there's businesses. That's why there's leadership expos. That's why all these things, because people value the idea of somebody that knows how to connect with other humans. So that's the path that I've chosen, that I've taken. But there's something for everyone out there. So look at those three things.
There's two things about this question of what are you good at, which has really stood out to me. The first one is the what are you good at question. Do you think it's a question where you could also develop a trait that you enjoy doing? For example, I might be horrible at basketball, right? But for example, if I love shooting a free throw now and then, do I go, all right, I want to practice basketball for 4 hours a day because I enjoy doing it, even though I'm the shittiest player on the team? Do I practice every day and I can still become that player?
I would say I have a story. So growing up, I was working for my father in the restaurant business, and I never wanted to take over the family business. I come from an immigrant background, immigrant family. My parents are from Italy. And I would spend time at my friend's mom's salon, and I saw this really cool transformation that would happen in the salon. Woman would come in, she'd feel a certain way about herself, probably low energy. She didn't love her hair. It was dry, it was damaged, whatever, but it had an impact on her confidence. She'd get her hair cut or get her color or get her blowout in style, and now she's like, I could take on the world. Like, she's feeling so confident about herself. And I would watch this happen, and I'm like, wait, 45 minutes and this woman is transformed? This is so cool. I want to do this. I'm the one of three boys. I had never touched anybody's hair other than my own hair. And I never held a blow dryer. I never held a curling iron. I never held a brush. But I said, I want to go to cosmetology school, and I want to be one of the top hairdressers in America. And, like, that's my goal. I show up at beauty school, and it's me and 27 other girls. My teacher is Miss Lucy, and Miss Lucy is watching me, like, look at these brushes and blow dryer, and I'm like, what the heck am I supposed to do with this stuff? And all these girls around me have done their own hair, have done their sister's hair, have done their mom's hair, or braided hair before, and I have, like, two left hands. I'm the worst student I think that Miss Lucy has ever seen. And to a point where, like, 3 weeks in, she's like, hey, Gio, like, are you sure? Are you sure you want to do this? Like, this is really sad, and I feel bad for you. Do you really want to follow this path? And I was like, yes, I want to do this.
Yeah, well, I'd love it.
So what I would do, Rishi, is I would go home, and I would take a round brush, like a hairbrush, and I'd go home, and I would lay in bed. I'm like 19 years old. I'd lay in bed, and I would just practice my dexterity of, like, rolling brushes. I'd practice my dexterity for hours of just opening and closing scissors, because you have to hold hair cutting scissors a different way. So I'm, like, practicing at home, because I'm like, it's not about working on somebody's head yet. I need to practice the foundation. It's like, you know, Kobe Bryant. Everyone loves Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant 20 years into his career, we're still practicing one pivot move, like his footwork. He's practicing his footwork 20 years into his career, number one basketball player in the world, arguably the best that ever lived. And he's practicing his footwork 20 years in. So I'm like, I'm practicing my dexterity of how to open and close scissors, of how to roll a brush. And I'm like, this is my edge. If my edge is just my work ethic. So if I can just open and close scissors, roll brushes, I could do this over and over again. I would do this for hours every single night. I showed up to school and like all of a sudden, wow, Gio at least knows how to hold a brush. Gio at least knows how to work through hair. Little by little, I became the most requested stylist in the school at that time because I already had the skill set of connecting with people. I just had to build the actual foundation and the skill set of the technicality of the skill. And so I just put those two together and I was like, oh, cool. I'm like good at this. I got this now. And then I found my way into the number one salon in the country. So to your question of like, what if you suck at something?
Yeah.
Well, I sucked at hair. I was terrible at it. And I was able to build a really successful career and a very fulfilling career on being a hairdresser because I worked really hard at it and it was something that I wanted to do and I put my mind and my body into it as well. And so to anyone who's listening, like, yeah, if you're not good at something but you think you'll enjoy it and you'll find love in it and you think it could benefit the world, go for it. Like, that's another thing. It's like, this is the time in your lives to just try and fail and learn and move forward. Just start doing stuff and seeing what clicks and seeing what you enjoy doing. And you don't have to have it all mapped out. Your path, it will find its way. You do not have to have it all mapped out. I had no idea about, at 16 years old, I didn't know I wanted to be a hairdresser. At 19, I knew I wanted to be a hairdresser, but didn't know I wanted to be an entrepreneur. At 27, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but didn't know that Glam Squad was even an option. And at 30, I'm 40 years old now, but at 39, I decided to take a leap of faith and start coaching entrepreneurs and successful people. And like, you just find your way and you don't have to have it all mapped out. So hopefully that removes some of the pressure because there's a lot of pressure in our lives and it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, Simon Squibb, I just recently read his dream, What's Your Dream? Read his book, What's Your Dream? Mm. And he talks about this idea that, and I don't know if you agree, the reason I bring it up is I love to hear your opinion about purpose, is he says purpose is developable because you should try different acts of giving, and the act of giving that clicks with you the most, there your purpose revolves around that. So maybe everyone is born with a purpose, but it's in our duty to explore acts of giving to actually find that purpose. Do you think people are born with a purpose? Is it actually searchable? What is it?
I mean, I think that's well said. I think the concept of exploration and the concept of like, you can look for it. You might think you have it, but yeah, the most fulfillment comes from giving. Let's be real. I mean, I heard somebody say recently, which is like the person that said that money doesn't buy happiness hasn't given any away. And it's like, oh my God. Like when I heard that really clicked for me. It was like, there's value in everything. And the beauty of having is to give what you have. That could be love, that could be money, that could be skill set, that could be wisdom. But if you are only retaining it for yourself, your fulfillment in life will be capped out for sure. So I'm in a place in my life right now, which is one of the most fulfilling places, which, you know, I get to coach people. And to me, that's a opportunity to give wisdom, to give knowledge, to give support, to help somebody get into their greatness. I'm a husband. And so the idea that I can help create a life with my wife, and that feels like I'm serving and giving. And, you know, we do a lot of stuff within the community. I run a men's group where I live, where I've got 15 men. We meet every single month. And I use that as an opportunity to challenge the way people think so that we can give each other concepts and ideas and space to be able to share. And the last is as a father. Like, I can serve my kids, give my kids, teach them, guide them, support them. There's nothing more fulfilling than giving. Nothing. And a lot of it comes down to time and being intentional with it. So I very much subscribe to what you said about this book that you're reading and the concept of purpose. So much of it is built into giving, and you know, that's just one of those things that like we kind of inherently know, but I wish I really practiced that. You know, I don't know if everyone relates to this, but I was like 18 years old and I was selfish because I wanted to be out there partying and meeting a bunch of people, but I was in like party mode, and I was 20 years old, party mode. And it was all about like being seen and being out there in the world and meeting all these cool people. But cool was different. My relationship with cool was different then than what it is now. And I think you have to kind of go through those things, but I would say remove the pressure, because again, just like explore, find things that excite you, find things that you're interested in, ask yourself better questions. I used to ask myself, like, what do I want to do with my life? Well, that's so abstract and it's so pressure filled. That's a lot. It's a lot of pressure. Yeah. To be like, what do I want to do with my life? Oh my gosh, life could be 90, 100 years now. Like, what I want to do with the whole thing, I have no idea. But it's like, what problems do I love solving? What challenges do I like to face? What continues to excite me? What makes me angry in this world? What pisses me off? What's unique about me? Like, these are just questions that if we start asking ourselves better questions, you get really interesting and really cool answers that you can explore and try some stuff, fail at it, learn, and move forward.
And honestly, Gio, I think since we brought it up earlier, I think one of the ways to even make sure we're getting the answers is, I know it sounds super easy, but getting a piece of paper and a pen and literally writing it down, for me, that has changed the game. After reading so many books, I was like, Rish, first of all, you're reading the books, but you're not taking action on it. And second of all, you're not taking notes, which is then not ingraining in your head. So I finally started taking notes. And for every exercise in a book I read now, I literally go, I'm going to stop reading the book. I don't give a shit until I finish the exercise that they provided. Yeah. I'm going to do the exercise. And it is life-changing. I know it sounds super easy to do, but there's a reason why so many people don't do it, and they're not maybe finding the answers to the questions. And yes, I'm not saying you're going to get it, but I feel like it's such an easy way to answer your questions.
So good. And there's a difference between consumption and creation. Mm. I found myself for a long time just consuming. You're just consuming. I'm reading books, all these books, books on subconscious, books on leadership, books on Richard Branson and all these successful people. And it's like you're just consuming all of this. But at what point are you turning that consumption into creation? And that's something that I had to work on, because I was like, oh, cool, I'm learning all of these things, but you're not taking action on it. You got to take action. Otherwise, the process is just total consumption. And then it's easy throwing in social media in there. So I love what you said. I think taking notes and really writing things down has dramatically changed my life. Whether it's gratitude, like we talked about before, or it could be some of those questions that you're asking yourself. You know, I do this with the people that I work with and coach. It's like so much of it is, I'll have worksheets for them, and I'll have them, you just think beyond what we naturally are focusing on. And if you can do that and think about, you know, what is it that you want? What you talk about purpose, but like, what am I good at? What do I love doing? What problems do I love solving? What challenges do I love to face? All of these things, you start connecting dots, and then there's clarity in all of that. So I say create, but create really means that you're putting effort behind something and taking action. And that's one of the most important things. Like, you can't just talk about stuff. You can't just read stuff. You can't just learn stuff. You got to apply it. And the application of all of this is literally the last part, and then just the most important part, because then you can learn, you can iterate, and you can grow. And I love that you said that, Rishi. I think it's spot on.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate it. I drop a gem now and then, you know. I tell my best.
I've heard a few of them so far.
don't do that, because now I'm under pressure. But so money can buy happiness then. It just depends on who we give it to.
I think there's a cap to that.
Okay.
There's a cap to... There's studies on this.
Yeah.
There's a cap to, like, after a certain amount of financial wealth, of money, the happiness that it can bring you, the joy that it can bring you, there's a cap to it. And I have this relationship with happiness and joy. And I think happiness can be short, not can, I think happiness is short-lived. Happiness is a moment. I'm happy in this moment, and then I'm not happy in this moment. Example, you know, your kid gets hurt, somebody passes away, there's a family emergency. People say, I just want you to be happy. I want to be happy all the time. I don't think that's possible. Mm-hmm. Joy to me is more long-term.
Okay.
Finding joy in things that, finding joy in the pain, finding joy in the adversity, because you know that it's going to, you know, that discomfort is going to make you stronger. When somebody who, I forget who said it, but obviously like what doesn't kill me makes me stronger. Like that's very real. You know, I'm reading a book right now called Tools from 2013. And it's Jonah Hill's therapist, who also has a Netflix special. And he kind of talks about the idea that if you're going to live a fulfilling life, that there's going to be pain, there's going to be struggle, there's going to be adversity. And I imagine anyone who's listening to this podcast right now is probably somebody who's has experienced some of that in their life, because we all have it. And as you grow and as you mature and get older, you also realize that, like, yeah, I'm going to fail. My business, there's going to be people where your business fails. I have had ideas that have failed. I have had investments that have failed. A lot of them. And pain comes along with that because you lose something. If you can find joy in the learning and joy in the process and joy in the fact that, like, yeah, this is going to happen, I think life can be much more fulfilling. And I have a new word that I've reframed the concept of, like, what do I want my life to be? My life, I don't believe, can be always happy. I also not sure if I can find joy in everything. I'm not there yet. But I know that I want to live a life of excitement. And excitement is my word. I want to be excited by my work. I want to be excited by my energy. I want to be excited by being on a podcast with Rishi. I want to be excited by parenting my kids. I'm excited by my business. Excited by my clients that I'm coaching. That, to me, is where that's like the magic for me. So yeah. If I'm excited by the adventure and the trips and all that, that to me is the kind of life that I want to live. So my word for my year, but also for my life, is excitement.
Dream a life you'd want to be excited to live.
There you go. You just did that for me. Thank you.
No, but the reason I brought up the money part is I think it's good to classify money as a tool, because at the end of the day, I think everyone's unified goal is that if we can build a life where we can make a living off of our purpose, that's what the goal is, right? And maybe the purpose is different for everyone. And this is why I think you're an expert in this. You coach entrepreneurs. Once we find the purpose, and I think that's what, tell me if I'm wrong, but is that what entrepreneurship is about? Turning your purpose into a living?
I think that that's when the most fulfillment happens. You know, I've worked with some people and I've shared this with them before, but I've placed limitations. We all do. We I don't want to generalize this, but I've had limitations in my life where I self-imposed limitations. You've got this inner bully that's telling you you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you're not rich enough, you're not all of these things. And I call it the inner bully as opposed to, you know, your inner coach. And what I've really struggled with when that voice comes in is you search for validation. You search for recognition from other people from the outside world. And at least that's what I did. And I see that a lot happen with people of all ages, all genders. It doesn't matter. We do this, right? And what I have had to tell myself is you don't need their green light to go for greatness. You do not need their green light to go for greatness, because greatness comes when you're choosing your calling over comfort and convenience. So I want to really talk about that for a second, is this concept of, like, when you're choosing your calling, you could call it purpose, over something that's comfortable or convenient, that's when you're on a mission. That's when you're letting your passion shine through. And that's when it's almost like this concept of the point of no return, where you're like, this has become a need and a must for me. Like,
that's all you can think about.
every single barrier, as opposed to, oh, it'd be nice if I did this, or it'd be nice if I had that, or it'd be nice if my business did this. It's like, no. When it's a must, everything changes. So it's something that I really, really believe in is, if you can choose your calling over comfort and convenience, that's the way that you get to greatness. And you do not need their green light to get to greatness. And I've had to tell myself that over and over again, of outside validation and what are people going to think about me, and is this the right move to make, and are people going to be calling me names? I've experienced that adversity throughout my career, because whenever you're doing something that is really challenging and innovative and disruptive, people are going to say things about you that might be unkind. People might say things about you that they think you're crazy. Like, there's no way this shit's going to succeed. Mm-hmm. And I heard that when I made that transition from being a hairstylist in the salon to being an entrepreneur and being a co-founder of Glam Squad, is like, oh my gosh, the amount of people that were like, there's no way that's going to be successful. Who is this? Who does he think he is? Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't think about proving them wrong, to be honest with you. I thought about proving it to myself. It wasn't about them and the outside voice. It was like, I'm going to prove this to myself, that no matter what happens, at the end of the night, I can lay my head down on my pillow and sleep because I knew I took that risk. And that's the most important thing for me, is like, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to commit to it. And it's not about the result of the success that comes with it. It's not about the, oh my gosh, this is successful and now everyone knows it and sees it. It's about the inner belief, the inner excellence of, I put something out there, I said I'm going to do it, and I did it. And that's where the confidence comes. The confidence doesn't come from you. When you start the thing, whatever that thing is, confidence is not a requirement. It's not a requirement. Confidence is just the result of doing the thing. So, example, you don't need to be confident to speak in front of a room of 1,000 people. You could be scared out of your mind to do that. Public speaking, one of the biggest fears that people have. The confidence comes from the doing.
Mm.
It's like, I did it. Now I'm feeling confident about doing it again. So my confidence comes from keeping the promises that I make to myself. Every time that I say I'm going to do something, it could be going to the gym in the morning, 5 a.m. It could be waking up and doing my gratitude for 7 years straight, or meditation, or it could be anything. My confidence comes from keeping that promise and not giving my mind a voice. Because our mind is, right, that 5 a.m. gym, what's your mind going to say? Right? Your mind's like, oh, come on, it's so much cozier in this bed, and oh, the blanket feels so good. It's cold outside. I live in New York. It's 10 degrees out. Right? But if your mind doesn't get a vote and you just break through and do that thing and not overthink it, that's where the confidence comes. And so this takes time and habit forming, and it's a lot of work. But if you can get to that place, that inner belief, that conviction inside is just, it's so powerful.
Action first.
Action first. Move forward.
And this idea of purpose and a calling of comfort, how do you make sure you're not conflating the two? How can we ensure that we're actually chasing a purpose and not just that calling of comfort? Because I've been in a position where I think I've wanted something, and I've asked myself a lot of times, why am I doing this podcast? Is it because I want to be back in 10 years and at a high school reunion be like, look where I made it? Or is it because I genuinely want to help people? How do I make sure, and how do other people make sure that their purpose is truly something that is for giving and not getting?
It's a feeling. It's a feeling. And step one is asking yourself. It's very, very brave of you, very courageous to ask yourself that, because it can be a very vulnerable thing to say, why am I actually doing this? And the reflection that a lot of people don't do is a huge part of growth. You have to reflect on it and ask yourself those questions. I do that with a lot of the things in my life. Why am I actually doing this? Is it to serve people? Is it because I want the external accolades? Is it because I'm doing this because it's just comfortable for me and I'm good at it? Or do I actually care about it? And I think that reflection is really, really important. I would also add that if you spending time in thought And not everything you do has to serve. I think we have to be careful with, like, some things can be for yourself. Like, I like nice things. I also want to be able to, like, and always, I want to enjoy the things that I do too. So you don't have to always, it doesn't have to always be to serve. But when you're looking at choosing discomfort over comfort, or your calling over the comfort and convenience, a lot of times a calling is going to be disruptive. A lot of times a calling is going to be that I'm going to have to stretch myself. This is going to be hard. This is going to be uncomfortable. This is going to be risky. You know, I could have been, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I could have been a behind-the-chair hairstylist making a lot of money, and I had a really successful career, and I was one of the top stylists in the salon, and that was a very easy path to take. I was very comfortable at 28 years old. I was making a lot of money. I had all of this attention of all these, you know, this guy's doing amazing stuff and he's successful and he's got this life, blah, blah, blah. Great. Like, that could have been an easy path to continue on and life would have probably been pretty good. But my calling was, I want to make a bigger impact. I want to help people. I want to do more. I want to be more. I want to challenge myself. And so I know that when I'm uncomfortable and it applies to something that I'm really passionate about, and it's like, it's risky, it's uncomfortable, it doesn't feel good, it feels heavy, I'm like, oh cool, this is the spot, this is exactly where I need to be. And a lot of times that I'll remind myself when it gets really freaking hard, that's when most people will stop and they'll get back into their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I view it as, okay, if I can break through this, now it's so heavy and so uncomfortable and like it doesn't feel good and that adversity kicks in, that's when most people stop and they choose the comfortable path. So now I'm part of the 1% or the 5% that are continuing to move forward. So the competition decreases because there's less people there now. So it's something that I just think about. I rewired my brain to think about that in that moment. So hopefully it could be beneficial for you and for your audience as well.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's the way you've talked about purpose is it's the impact you want to leave. And I think that's what people should take away. Now, this is where I think it gets interesting because I know you help a lot of entrepreneurs. And someone like me, for example, who's 20 years old, or maybe someone with no experience of turning their purpose into a living, what is the first step? Even like getting down to the very basics, what is the first step we take?
Well, first of all, you already have your podcast. And I think we tend to not give ourselves credit for a lot of the things that we do. And we struggle with this, especially as guys. We struggle with the idea of, like, you know, just keep doing more. You've already done something that's pretty remarkable, which is like you started a podcast for people to listen, to hear, to learn. And it's not some random thing. It's like personal development. It's building businesses. It's really, really cool. So I want to just acknowledge you for that, because you're already doing really, really great stuff. And man, when I was 20, you say you're 20 years old? That's awesome. When I was 20 years old, I was out there partying and, you know, causing havoc in whatever city I was in. So good for you, because you're already on a better path than I am. Where do you start? Okay. So again, going back to like, what's a natural skill you have? What do you love? And then what does the world need? Okay. So like, if you can start thinking about answering that first, I think it could be helpful, because you're going to be doing your work for a really long time, for the most part. You kind of want to love it. Because if you don't love it at first, the suck is going to really suck. And there's always going to be suck in the work. So like, if you don't want to do this long term, then I just find that life isn't going to be as fulfilling. What I would say is, as an entrepreneur who works with a lot of people, what I have found is people wait for the perfect moment to launch something. And what I tell people, at least the guidance that I give them, is perfection a lot of times is disguised as procrastination. So you spend all this time, right? Don't let perfect be the enemy of progress. And you spend a lot of time trying to make something perfect without knowing, is there any desire for this? What are your customers saying? I'm not speaking to anybody. I'm just creating something, not getting it out there into the world as a V0 or V1. You got to get the feedback. So I guess my guidance would be, don't wait for the perfect moment. There's never a perfect moment. You want, if you've got an idea and you've got a product out there, start talking to people, start building relationships, and start speaking to customers. What do they want? What don't they want? What are features that are so important to them? When we launched Glam Squad, so for those of you that don't know, Glam Squad is mobile beauty services all powered through technology. So we have an app. We are nationwide now, over 13 different cities. We started back in 2014, so we're 11 years old. And we've got about 2,000 professionals out there in the world. And we go to people's homes and we make them look and feel beautiful. It's a wonderful concept. What I will tell you is, day one, you think our technology does what it does today? No, we had some basic outsourced app that did the bare minimum of what we had envisioned it could do. It did like 5% of that. That was not gonna hold us back from launching our service. We had beauty professionals. I had a training I had a vetting program for our pros. It was like on paper, right? There was no system, there was no curriculum, there was nothing built out. We still launched. Why? Because a couple things. One is we gotta get our product out into the world. The product was a service. Let's start gaining feedback from clients. Let's start hearing what features do they want in our app? What would be interesting for them? Do they want to be able to pick their own pro? Do they want different booking times? You know, all of these things are so essential when you have a product or a service and you want to make it better, you want to iterate on it, and you want to just build it better. You got to start talking to people and get the product out there. Because the worst thing is adding complexity. Complexity is the enemy of execution. You want to make somebody not book your service or not buy your product, make your message complex. I guarantee you, too many offers, too many services, too much confusion. They're on to the next. They're not touching your service. So the more features, the more buttons, the more options, a lot of times that adds complexity if there's stuff that your clients don't even care about. So focus on the things that actually matter. You've got a product or you have a service, get it out there into the world, start talking to people, start talking to customers, and then start adding the features and building it differently. But you've got to have an idea where it solves a problem, a real world problem, or else it can just be another one of those. But if you're not solving a problem, then you're, I mean, think about it, right? Amazon solved the problem. That's a big problem. If you don't have a problem that you're solving, then the value of your business decreases exponentially.
This is interesting. I like this idea that the product doesn't have to be perfect in the beginning. I think that's where actually a lot of people tend to be so scared, because they're like, my product sucks. Like, it's not where it wants to be. And they spend so much time asking themselves if it's the right product that some other competitor has just launched a shittier version, but in 10 years it's going to be better. So I think that's really good advice.
I'm trying to think of who said it, but there's one, you know, massive global founder who, I'm forgetting who said it, but he basically said, somebody had commented on how bad his initial product was, his V1 product, and this guy's wildly successful. And he goes, oh, you think this one's bad? Wait till you see the next product I'm putting out there. And it was like, yes. And I'm not saying, I don't want this to be misconstrued as like, you just take the crappiest thing and put it out there in the world. Yeah. But understand that there's a balance between, okay, I feel pretty good about this. I want to get it out there and have people react to it. Because that consumer feedback is, that's the sweet stuff. And if you don't have that consumer feedback and you start building something much bigger than it needs to be, then you're going to run into much bigger problems in the future. So I like to think of, you solve a problem, you start small, skill set wise, really if you're not hiring sales and marketing, and you need to know it yourself because you're a one person team. I don't love doing things alone, to be honest with you. I love being able to have people help me, guide me, support me, challenge me. But sales and marketing, whether you're in an AI world or not, and we are, is still essential. You can have a great product, but if you don't know how to story tell, or you don't know how to get that product out there into the world, or you don't know how to market that product or understand the type of customer that you're going after and being super clear about that, it doesn't matter how good your thing is. It's going to be limited. I wish somebody was telling me that at 18, 20 years old about marketing and sales, because I would have probably gained back about 5 to 7 years of my life.
Mm. So this idea of the skill set is really interesting, because even yesterday I got into a crazy debate with one of my friends about the fact that basically we're having this conversation about current entrepreneurs my age who are maybe starting businesses without the expertise or without the right skill set, and they're starting too soon and risking it all. So this idea of sales and marketing, you really want to become an expert or build expertise on these skills. What is, do you think, the optimal way of building these skills? Is it actually going out there to get experience working a job and then coming back to it? How do we actually put in the time to learn these skills?
So I was on, I'll tell you a story. At Glam Squad, we started off in services, right? Which we talked about, going to people's homes and styling their hair, makeup, or nails. And we built that into a really big services business. 2018, we said, you know what, we're going to go into product, consumer goods. So we're going to create our own line of hair products, our own line of makeup, skin products. And we did that. We did it with a very similar story as our services business. And if I have learned anything, and that product line is no longer, we did it for a period of time. I learned so much, and I learned so much about sales and story. And people, we have to always remember that people are not purchasing based on benefits and based on key features. That's not why people buy things. They buy the why. They buy the why, and they buy the story. Think about all of the beauty products that are out there. There's a million different creams, a million different hairsprays, a million different lotions out there. It's like, why am I choosing yours? It's the story. And so I was on QVC. I'm not sure if you guys know QVC. QVC is basically like a home shopping network. Somebody can go on TV and watch and then purchase from that. And I was on QVC multiple times. And what I learned during that process is the art of storytelling. So what I would tell anybody, it doesn't matter what line of work you're in, if you can practice, whether it's in the mirror or in front of a friend or a loved one, and you can practice the art of selling, whether it's a product, and storytell on that product, and try and sell somebody that product, and just practice the language, practice the flow, practice the voice and the confidence that comes along with it. You can read books, of course. There's great marketing books and sales books, but selling is everything in today's world, and you have to be able to sell your product, especially in the beginning when you're talking about people reaching your age who, you know, you're not going to have teams of 5, 10, 15, 20 people.
Exactly.
You know, you might be the salesperson, the marketing person, the social media person, the COO, the CEO. And if you're all of that, you kind of have to understand each element of those roles, and sales is such a big part of it. So what I did was I worked in front of the mirror. I practiced in front of the mirror. And the tighter your story is, the better. It's very easy to go on and on for 10 minutes about a product. It's really hard to keep it simple. And so think about that when you're trying to sell, is focus on what is the one-liner, the story, the tagline that I can give this product that's going to create incredible desire and buy-in on this product. So it was a very, very valuable lesson for me to really focus on storytelling and not about like, oh, this product does this. A lot of products do that. What makes your product different? It's story.
This is interesting though, because this idea of sales, you talk about it in the fact that we can just practice in front of the mirror. And I'm so scared that the reason I got into this debate with my friend was he was saying that to actually learn the skills that people need to become entrepreneurs. You need to get corporate experience, go get it first, and then come back to it. I think people are, in his mind, which is fine, I think he's just a bit scared that people are risking it too much, too early. But the idea is, in the modern world, do you think it's the resources to gain these skills can come from outside of corporate experience?
I guess, so when I made the transition from being a stylist, where I had no corporate experience,
yeah,
zero, but I knew what I was good at, and I had the skill sets that I have were what some would call the soft skills. Empathetic, a great listener. One of my superpowers is the ability to really be present and listen. And as a hairstylist, you have to do that. You're listening to your clients the entire time, and years and years of that. So I built these soft skills, but I didn't build the skill of raising money. I didn't build the skill of business acumen, business language, all of the things that somebody might believe you need for the corporate world. My first year at Glam Squad, my business partners are very different than I am from a background. They were Ivy League graduates, incredibly smart. And so they had all this business schooling, and I didn't come from that world. We had to raise money. And I'm sitting in these meetings, and I'm hearing these conversations happening, and they're so high level and powerful, and it's a language that I had never spoken before. Getting that exposure was really good for me, but at the same time, I also realized that the value that I bring to this table is that is actually not my language. My uniqueness is that I can assess somebody and put myself in their shoes and think about, what's this person thinking? What's the most important conversation, or what's the most important thing that my audience member or the person in front of me is thinking about? So I come from this place of being empathetic and really putting myself in somebody's shoes and thinking about, what is it that they care about, right? Because if you can tap into what do they care about versus what's the message that I want to deliver, what's the sales message I want to deliver, selling, the best salespeople just know their customer intrinsically. They're so confident in their ability to know what is it that their customer wants. And if you know what your customer wants, like you live it, you breathe it, you care about it so deeply, there's nothing more powerful than that in sales. Because people need to know that you're not selling. They need to feel like you're not selling, that it's just authentic, that you want them to live a better life through your product. That's the most important part. So that's so key, is this, the idea that you have to understand your customer, what they want and what their desires are. Even when you're raising money and you're sitting in a room filled with VCs or private equity, is like, what is most important to them? What do they care about? And if you can put yourself in their shoes and think about that, you can flex to what's in front of you, which becomes really powerful.
So I'm sure you've built up some business acumen at this point now, even though that first meeting...
I'd hope so.
Yeah, so... And the reason I bring that up is you've obviously built it up through your entrepreneurial journey with Glam Squad. And I'm just scared that, for example, as a team of one, like you talk about at the beginning, you're just that one person. Do you need to actually build up that a business acumen before you start? Or can you actually learn it on the way?
Oh, gosh, it's all about the journey. You learn it on the way. I mean, if you have a growth mindset... and not a fixed mindset, which is very clear to me that you're always thinking about learning and growing and being a better version of yourself and reaching your potential. That's the beauty of your mindset will guide you. And I look at myself. Today, I'm smarter than I was years ago. I have more knowledge than I was years ago. I've learned so much more than I knew years ago. And I've built my business acumen over the years through experience, through failure, through adversity, through trying things and learning and breaking things. And all of that has created the version of me today. But the exposure of it, you can do it yourself and it takes you longer. But just because you're a one-man show for now, which again, it doesn't mean that you can't start talking to people. It doesn't mean that you can't start putting a product in front of people and saying, hey, what do you think about this? Can I pitch you on this real quick? You know, do your own little version of Shark Tank and see how that works for you. And, you know, I was talking to my daughter the other day. She's got this beautiful voice, but she's very outgoing, but at the same time, to sing, it's something about her that she doesn't want to sing in front of people, but she'll sing in front of my wife and I all day long. So we have a birthday party coming up, and I said, honey, you have such a beautiful voice. I love this Moana 2 song, What Lies Beyond. She's like,
oh, it's a banger.
It's a banger, dude.
Yeah.
It's a banger. I actually play it at the gym. I'm like working out to it. Like, I'm all pumped up listening to this song. It's so crazy.
Because you're a Jack guy. I'm sure the other guy's like, yo, this guy must be listening to like some deep motivational music.
It's like, what is this guy listening to? And it's basically like Moana 2. I have a whole soundtrack on it. So we're going to this party and I'm laying in her bed, putting her to sleep. And I'm like, honey, I'd love for you to sing at this birthday party. And she says to me, she says, how many people are going to be there? This is a six-year-old kid. So I think that this fear of speaking in front of others is, it's almost like we're born with it.
Innate.
It's innate. Like, she's 6 years old and she feels it. So she goes, how many people are going to be there? I said, it's going to be about 20 people there. She goes, no, I'm okay. I said, why? She goes, because I don't want to sing in front of people. I said, well, what if your voice is so powerful that it moves people positively? What if your voice is so powerful that it makes people feel so good? And she was like, oh, okay. And I said, and what if you think about the power of your voice, and that when we're in this room, that you and I, when we make eye contact, know that I'm thinking about you and that I love you and I think you're so special. And she's like, okay, I'll do it. Now, I'm forgetting the point that I was going to make. So what was the question that you asked me?
Well, it started with is it the journey or the destination? Like, in the sense that, like, that was the initial point.
Okay. But there was something else there, because this is my foggy brain from having two kids and a lot of responsibility. I'm like, okay, there's my daughter's going to this party. She's feeling a certain way about herself, and allowing her to think about herself differently, but thinking about the power of her voice and the reason behind it, as opposed to we all have this like selfish ego, and our selfish ego is going to always think about, what are people thinking of me? So when I would go into rooms, and if I walked into a boardroom and I was insecure, my first thought is, what are people thinking about me? And that can feel very selfish. It doesn't feel selfish at the time, but the spotlight, it's a spotlight effect. It's all about me. What are they thinking about me? As opposed to, what value can I bring to them? And the value that I can bring to them is to understand, what are they thinking about? What are their limitations? What do they want to get out of this conversation? What do they want to get out of this product? So if you start switching it onto other people and really leading with empathy, and empathy is so overused now, but really thinking about, who's your customer and what's the most important thing on their mind? What problem can you solve? If you can think about the problem that you solve, one word, what's the problem I solve? And you can guide, and that can guide you, you'll probably have a very successful business.
So it's, I guess, I mean, this was the original question. I guess it's like the fact that we can still develop it on the way and still understand these soft skills, even when we're a one-man team.
Yes. The answer is absolutely. You can, because you got to just put yourself out there and try stuff and test stuff and have a team of people that are supporting you. You got friends, you've got family members, you've got boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is. You can ask people like, hey, I want to pitch you on something. I want to try something. I want to perform something in front of you. You got your own little Shark Tank that you're doing, and it's just really valuable. And it all comes from a place of, you got to put yourself out there. And I know those moments in my life when I put myself out there, it's hard, it's uncomfortable, it's scary. It's like, it doesn't feel good in the moment. But I heard somebody say, I was like, my wife's friend, she's a great speaker. And she was just on a podcast, and she said, you know, that moment that just scares the shit out of you. Like, you're just scared out of your mind. Like, that's where the magic happens. That's when you're in the right place, is when you're just scared out of your mind. That's when you're in the right place. So I know that feeling because I've been scared out of my mind many times. And when that pops in, I'm like, oh, I'm in the right place. It's going to suck. It's going to suck for a little bit, but I'm in the right place.
And did your daughter sing?
The party's on Saturday.
All right. Well, we need a big top performance. I need a video of this, by the way.
Yeah, I'll let you know how it goes.
That's about. And is she singing? Like, she's planning to sing? Is that the?
Yeah, I think so.
That's what I like to hear. Go on, yep. Gio. Love that.
Cool. I'll get her to do it.
The start, I think, if we're sticking to the basics, we've talked about how to start. I want to get your opinion because you obviously help with a lot of entrepreneurs. What are the typical mistakes you see, or typical fears that you see entrepreneurs starting, like when they start?
Some of it we already talked about. I would say the first is, and this is in no particular order, but I would say that waiting for things to be perfect, that's absolutely number one, is you're trying to build something and you want it to be perfect. And sometimes it's ego, sometimes it's just what other people are doing. Sometimes you're just scared, sometimes you're procrastinating, but you want it to be perfect. My Glam Squad example is Glam Squad was not perfect. It's 10 times better than it is now from a operational standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, from our brand, from our technology. It's all 10 times better, if not more. But back then, we launched with what we thought was good enough to launch. It was good enough. So be okay with iterating and to getting your product out there into the world. The second is, to do that, you got to talk to customers. I know way too many people that launch something and they're not getting the feedback. You got to talk to customers. You got to understand pain points. What problem are you solving? What do they find valuable? What do they care about? Are there any other brands that are in the same world as your brand and that they're talking about, or they're trying to, or they're working with or using? So talking to customers is something that I think people lack. The third is complexity. So all of these things are connected. You build something, it doesn't need to be perfect, but you got to speak to customers so that they can help you make it better. And then if you're speaking to customers, then you're going to simplify your product. If you're not speaking to customers, you're going to build something that's more complex because you're just adding pieces and elements and features and fragrances and all this stuff that's just like the customer doesn't give a shit about. They don't care about it. They want this and you're giving them that. And that's because you're not talking to them. So those are kind of all tied together. At Glam Squad, we built something. We knew it could be better. We got feedback from customers. We could have launched other services. We could have launched spray tans. We could have launched facials. But at the end of the day, we spoke to customers, and that's not what they wanted from us. They wanted makeup, and they wanted nails. So we launched makeup, and we launched nails. And then they wanted other features, like being able to choose their professional. We launched that. And we just built it better and better and better for the customer. So you got to speak to customers, and you got to make your product as you're building it. Then you got to make it the best product out there. Okay? So there's not like, oh, we're just going to stop. You got to make it the best product out there because the product is everything. A great product with a great story has no limitations.
And it's funny because you give the advice saying launch before you're ready. If you actually launch before you're ready, that kind of means that your product isn't too complex already. So that's like an advantage you already have. Right. That when you take too much time to launch, you're complicating your product. But if you just start, your product's low-key just simple. It's already at its basics. It's at its foundations.
That's exactly right.
And the second part is, when you receive feedback, what does that process look like? Like, how do we actually reach out to customers? Is that literally just like, hey, dad, like, what do you think of this? Is that what it looks like?
Yeah, I mean, it could be as simple as you want it to be. It could be that you're reaching out to whoever's used your product and getting them feedback, a phone call. It could be a survey. We've done a lot of surveying, a lot of questionnaires. So getting feedback there, you build it out a little bit more. That's a wonderful way of leveraging AI in your world, is AI can really help you with creating surveys and questionnaires so that it can help you ask the right questions to give you the feedback that you're looking for to build on your product. But you can do it any which way possible. I've called up in my 10 years at Glam, 11 years now at Glam Squad, you know, I still make it a point and a responsibility of mine to speak to at least, speak, email, or text at least one client a day. At least one. Okay? Why? Because I need to know what people are saying. I need to know what they're thinking. I need to know what they're feeling. And some of it could just be short and sweet, and others could just be where a client wants to speak to me for 30 minutes on the phone, and it's worth my time. Because if I can hear one client story that's willing to spend 30 minutes with a co-founder of a business, you better believe that that client's going to walk away feeling incredibly special, listened to, and is probably going to tell 10 of her friends, like, yeah, I just spoke to somebody for 30 minutes at Glam Squad, and they really, really understand me as a customer, and they want to build a better business, and they want to build a better product. So it's valuable, and you got to make the time to do it. And some things may not seem scalable in the beginning. Oh my gosh, I have to speak to clients? That's going to take forever. You don't need to think about scalability at first. I think a lot of times we think about, oh, how do I turn this into a $1 billion business, right? How do I turn this into a unicorn? I would advise people not to think that way. One customer at a time, one client at a time. That's how I built any business I've had that's successful, whether it was my salon business or a Glam Squad business or my coaching business. It's one client at a time. Serve them better than anyone else will serve them, and they're gonna tell their friends. Word of mouth is your best marketing tool. It's not about branding and colors and font sizes and icons. All that stuff comes around at some point. And is it important? Yes. But at the end of the day, serve them better than anyone else, and you're going to have a raving fan. And they're going to tell 10 of their friends, and they're going to become raving fans. And that's how you build your business.
Well, it seems like it's exactly what you said before. You wouldn't start a purpose if it wasn't linked to the act of giving. So why wouldn't you want to know what the people that you're impacting actually think about your product, right? If it's actually about helping the people, surely you want to know how you can actually help them properly. That's right. I think that's brilliant. Gio, this has been an absolute pleasure. I do this with all my guests, and I know I've dropped a few gems in there, but you I like did. To do this. I try my best, mate. I try my best. I need to match my guests at times. You know? Yeah. I can't just like... Thank you. But to end it off, well, two things. First of all, if we're ever in the same city, I need a trim badly, all right? So
I got you. I need that ASAP. I got you.
And second is, I know I've dropped a few gems, but what is the best piece of advice you've ever received that you want to share?
I've received a lot of great advice, and it's served me at different points in my life. The advice I've received most recently, which is so simple, is like, just have fun. I've taken parts of my life so seriously that it actually didn't allow me to have the joy and the fun that moment probably deserved. And I would just say, like, have fun doing it. You fail, have fun. You fall, you get up, you have fun. You succeed, it's fun. It's just enjoy it. And you have so much more time than you think. Life is short, but it's also long. It's a weird thing, time. Mm. And so if you know your purpose now, great. If you don't put pressure on yourself. Like, start thinking about the things. Start allowing yourself to dream. Start allowing yourself to give yourself space to reflect and be intentional about the kind of person that you want to be and how you want to show up in this world. And know, the last thing I would say is really know, understand the power that you have. Somebody said this quote, which I think is one of the best quotes that I've heard, which is your purpose or your calling is, or your job is to find your uniqueness and exploit it to the entire world in the service of others. Find your uniqueness. What makes you so powerful? What makes you so unique? And exploit it in the service of others. Man, if you can do that in your life is going to be fun, fulfilling, exciting, powerful, and you'll feel like you're in control, and it's a beautiful thing. So there's a lot in there, but while you're doing all that, have fun. My wife tells me that all the time now. Loosen up, have fun. So that's my gem.
And it can start with a single step, with literally just starting with gratitude.
That's right.
With visualization. It all comes back to the foundations.
Yeah, that's right.
Brilliant, Joe. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Awesome. Rishi, thank you so much for having me. And I wish you all the best. I think you're doing amazing things. And you've got a bright energy about you, man. So very excited to watch you from afar.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it.